This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 489, brought to you by Geek Nation Tours and iFanboy listeners just like you.
It's a dog eat dog competition.
No doubt.
I'll be going like you wish,
and I'm out.
Cause I ain't got time for hanging around when you're fucking my love in all the wrong places.
It's a dog eat dog competition.
No doubt. I'll be going like you wish,
and I'm out.
Cause I ain't got time for hanging around when you're fucking my love in all the wrong places.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 489. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. That's my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
I am so excited to be here today. You excited to be here today, Connor?
Yes. Always. We are iFanboy. We like comics. If we can read a bunch of comics, one of us picks their favorite book, sometimes mere hours before showtime. We call that the Pick of the Week.
Are you suggesting? I thought that when I sent it to you. I thought, he's going to be. It wasn't that I hadn't read that. It's that there were 8 million books.
No, I know. I just was glad I had read it, so I didn't have to worry about having to fit it in. We talk about those other books, other topics of interest, fun stuff, listener mail. It's a good time. Spoiler warning, it's a review show. There'll be some spoilers, so exercise some caution and some common goddamn sense.
Goddamn sense out these people.
Josh.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I read this book that was the Pick of the Week. And I thought, wow, that was fantastic.
Oh, good.
But then surely the Pick of the Week will be Section 8, number one. But what was it?
The Pick of the Week was Starve, number one, from from Image Comics. By the way, I just want to start with, this is Starve, number one, from Brian Wood and Daniel Zaze. And Dave Stewart on colors. That's a good team right there. Yes, and I keep looking at it and going, oh, it's Vertigo. Because it reeks
like
Vertigo. Looks like a Vertigo book. Daniel Zaze was a Vertigo house guy, basically, for a while. He did everything over there. And this is the final nail in the coffin for what Vertigo was. Is Will Bennis
officially gone? It feels like DMZ.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big
so,
Vertigo.
I saw it and I thought, I don't know if I want to read that. And then I started to read it and I thought, I don't know if I really like that. And by the end, they go, I really want to read the next one. It was totally a progressive read for me. And you're right. I was 98% sure that Section 8, which we will talk about later, number one, was going to be the Pick of the Week. But when I was looking at all my books, I read some really good books. There were other contenders easily that we could be talking about. But there was something about this book, the combination of elements, that I really liked. So what is it, you might be asking? All right, so we open in sort of a I guess like a sleazy Thai bar or something like that, and there's a degenerate druggy drinking dude somewhere in Southeast Asia, and he's gambling and hanging out with a bunch of lowlifes, and he's like, I love it like this. And then somebody shows up and they say, you have to come back. And then you find out that he is like the one of the world's preeminent celebrity chefs.
It's like Anthony Bourdain, even looks a little bit like him.
Yeah, and his show, Starve, title of the book, has become increasingly popular since the world fell apart. And that's the other part that's going on. This is like near post-apocalyptic. This is when New York City does flood and the economies all collapse, and there is still a sort of upper class that has money and then a lower class caste that has nothing, which is a terrifying prospect of reality that does not seem all that fictional.
And so what's really funny about this is that, you know, the cover is, it's called Starvers. The cover is a guy with a knife, and there's knives in the logo. And he, now knowing what the story's about, he's clearly wearing a chef's jacket, but the colors are inverted. So I didn't recognize that at the start. But so when the story opens, in this expat American's living low in Southeast Asia, and then the helicopter arrives to pick him up because he's got to come back. That's like the start of every super spy story, yeah. Right? So you expect he's got to come back to assassinate someone or to save the day, but he's a TV celebrity chef, and he's got to fill out his contract for the show he did.
Well, and then and if all that was it, and it was good, it was well done, and I think we can accurately say Brian Wood is a good futurist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like, it takes place just before DMZ, maybe not necessarily even a different world, but it's definitely similar.
It's that kind of world, yeah, that kind of future.
But then the other half of it is that there's this thing with his daughter, and I really liked the emotional resonance that was in there. And I know that Brian Wood has a daughter and he takes care of her, and that's like a thing for him. And I think you're seeing that come through in the work. And I have a soft spot for that. I thought that was a really nice. Like, he just sees her and he's like, why have I screwed up on everything? And it's really nice to sort of see the father go, well, that was stupid. Like, that was a horrible move. And so that, with his horrible ex-wife, I don't know what that has to do with his life. I don't know anything about it. You know, it's a nice.
There's a lot of great layers here. Yes. There's the fact that he came out of the closet, which is why the divorce happened. So there's that aspect to it. His old friend, who is his daughter's godfather, is now his chief rival, who took over his show when he disappeared and was presumed dead. And now he's got to come back to do this show for 8 more episodes that is all about, you know, making exotic foods for the richest of the rich, who are the only people left in the world who have anything. And so in the episode, the show starts and he's got to cook a dog. Mm-hmm. And it's there's just a lot of interesting things going on here. And the art is just amazing.
Yeah, you can count on JJ.
Yeah.
And I learned how to say that officially, like at the Vertigo office. I was like, how do I say that guy's name? JJ. Okay, thank you.
It's really evocative. There's a lot of heavy shadows and colors, but he and the Dave Stewart colors are great because the colors are muted.
Dave Stewart really, like, he really pulled it in. It's all like all the pages are sort of kind of a monotone.
Yeah. A lot of yellows and oranges.
One thing I know is that if you want a page that is mostly one color, but then there's a lot of gross red blood on it somewhere, Dave Stewart is your man. If you want to put red that's striking in the middle of your page, that's the guy you want to call.
Right. So it looks wonderful. As I said, he bears, and sometimes a slight resemblance physically to Anthony Bourdain. Not exactly, but there's a couple of panels where I thought it looked a lot like him. But he's kind of that.
He's kind of
that type. He's the roguish,
yes,
sort of bad boy. Does a lot of drugs, drinks a lot. So tall, skinny, gaunt, in his mid-50s, and now he's going to come back to eat anything, and enjoys all the sort of street food and stuff. So I got that kind of vibe from
to
him.
To me, like, he looked like visually, he just looked like a Paul Pope character.
Right. They get the long hair like that. Yeah.
So that's. But I totally. He had all the Anthony Bourdain things. Who did a book for Vertigo? So again.
But this was really good.
Yeah,
really, really good. I finished this and I went, wow, that's fantastic.
I don't even think I realized it, but by the end I liked it a lot, and then I thought about it more when I was trying to make a pick. I was like, oh, that's the one. So that was really nice. I like that. We've had a nice little surge from Brian Wood lately, of some good material, which is very fun.
Is it Gavin or Gavin Cruikshank?
Gavin Cruikshanks?
Cruikshank.
Cruikshank.
Gavin, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
It's It's a fun name.
So the odds-on favorite was going to be would have been Section 8 number one.
It's actually All-Star Section 8 number one.
Oh, is it?
It's the latest in the All-Star line.
Well, that's Okay, so let's explain what this is, because I think
most people don't know.
Most people don't know. There was a series from DC Comics proper called Hitman. It was written by Garth Ennis. It was drawn by John McCrae. I don't have any idea how in the world it existed.
It was the late 90s, yeah. Most of the books DC put out back then.
In the DC universe, it existed.
Yeah.
For God's sake.
Hell, Hitman even showed up in Justice League.
Yeah. There was this team of superheroes. they're good guys, called Section 8.
Oh, God.
With such people on the team as Bueno Excellente, who fights evil with the power of perversion.
creepy perversion.
Bueno. Phlegm Gem, who spits phlegm on people. The Defenestrator, puts you through a window. Jean de Baton de Baton, who is a Frenchman. The Baton.
The Dog Welder, who welds dogs to people. Friendly Fire, who would never hit what he's aiming at. And Shakes, which is probably the most... this guy has seizures.
It's so funny!
This book would never fly now.
No! No, I know. I've started to understand why Garth Ennis doesn't get the work he used to. I get it. In much the way that Jerry Seinfeld said he doesn't want to play colleges. Anyway, And then Sixpack, who is their leader, who is a regular at the bar in the book, which ran 60, 70 issues, something like that. And Sixpack is a very drunk person, but he styles himself a real superhero, and he goes on team-ups with Batman and Superman in his mind. Anyway, so... I guess this is a spoiler, but I don't know how much it's going to affect any. They all died in Hitman. And so maybe that's why this is All-Star. So basically in this...
Well, they're all dead in this issue, except for Sixpack.
Yeah, that's right. Sixpack has to get the team back together, but they're all dead. So
well, except for Bueno.
And the Dog Welder.
It's a new Dog Welder.
Oh, right, because he's black.
Yeah.
This is a great panel where he looks at the new Dog Welder and he's like, why aren't you? And then they just move on. It's very nice.
come to think of it, weren't you? Oh, well.
So he gets all new people. And, they won't be as funny as the other people. But I'm glad that he kept Dog Welder because it's the most ridiculous thing ever.
Well, this book is not for the easily outraged.
Yeah.
No. And also the sensitive to superheroes. I mean, one of the themes in Hitman was that Garth Ennis doesn't, really hates superheroes, and so you'd get these wildly out of characterizations of the Justice League. And in this one, Batman shows up, and this made me laugh heartily.
Right.
In that, so Section 8 needs 8 members for whatever reason, because there's 8 in the name. And Six Pack's only got 7.
Section 8, famously, the reason that you were booted out of military service because of mental instability.
Right, and there's something coming that Six Pack has seen a vision of, and he needs to get the team together to fight it. And so he gets 7 guys, but he needs an 8th, and he stumbles out of the bar, and just so happens Batman's out there. And so he says, great, Batman will join the team, and he goes to pitch him. And first of all, there was some great panels where Sixpack would see Batman in his various classic forms, like the Neil Adams drawing and
Kelly Jones backbreak, Jim Aparo, Robin Death. I was like, and they're note perfect.
Yeah, they're really great. And so then, but while he's talking to Sixpack, Batman, who had stopped at an ATM to get some money, gets a ticket from the cops, and it was just so.
And he pitched a fit. That's the other part. That's the part that is the best.
It was just funny.
It was.
I've bent over backwards to help you people. You people, huh? Yeah. What? You people. I didn't mean that. I mean, it's completely out of character.
Yeah. But you're saying that you have a sense of humor about that still?
Yeah. I mean, it was harder to deal with when I was younger and more sensitive about it. Now it's silly. As long as it's funny and not mean. I mean, it's all mean a little bit, but as long as it's funny, that's okay.
It's another. It's funny because it's another side of superheroes that he's just like, well, what would you think if you were on the street and you were one of these workaday guys? And that's kind of what it is. Like, that's the way that Ennis has always looked at superheroes. And I wouldn't want to read superheroes written by Ennis all the time, but every once in a while he does, and it's a fun take, and it's very consistent also. So, I mean, I think if I had any qualms about the book is that it just kind of, you know, it happened really fast. I was like, oh, yes, it's over. And so there wasn't much there.
I think it's only a 6-issue mini or something.
Yeah, which is, I'm amazed that this exists. This is the original team who did Hitman. As you read that over the course of it, you'll see McCrae's art really turn into something special. And he's got like his full powers here, but he definitely is working with a different style. He seems to be one of those guys who evolves over time. But, I mean, if you've ever read Garth Ennis talk about it, like, he loves these characters. And it looks, it's just like, it's just crazy fun to read them. I'm sure it is crazy fun to write them. So this is going to be big, wacky fun.
It's just like, I don't want to say it's easy, but if you drop, I'm just thinking of the original Section 8 characters, not the new ones, because I don't really know them yet. But to drop those characters in a room, it's really kind of easy to write that scene.
Super. And listen, it's not...
because they're fantastic.
It's not necessarily highbrow comedy.
No, it's not at all.
But it is also at the same time. And I don't know how he walks that line, but he does. Ennis used to do a lot of humor stuff. Do you remember Adventures of the Rifle Brigade?
Yes.
Which was, I think it was Vertigo. It was like a wacky British military group. And like he'd do stuff like this a lot. And he's very funny.
He is very funny.
Perhaps not entirely modern sensibility.
Well, funny. You know, Preacher was funny. Everything he's written has had humor in it. He's a funny writer.
Yeah, he is.
So that was enjoyable. But you're right. It did, all of a sudden it was over and you're just like, oh.
Yeah, I don't know that I expected more from it, but I think I wanted more from it. So I think I will like it as a series, but that's why it wasn't pick of the week.
But I also genuinely laughed 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Like, it was very funny.
All I did was read names to you and I couldn't keep it together. So...
This week, Batman number 41 kicked off the post-convergence era in which we, if you recall, in issue 40, Batman and the Joker died together in the bowels or the catacombs underneath Gotham City. And so now we have the new bunny-suited Batman in the giant mech exoskeleton suit with giant bunny ears. And you know, you have to be living under a rock to not know it's Jim Gordon in the suit, who has been recruited by the Powers Company Corporation, which we met in the last arc, or we've met previously in the book, to train a new Batman and keep the streets safe. So,
you know, what it's interesting because what you've got is a thing where they went through and they killed Batman again, and then Scott Snyder already wrote once he did Batman. Who had been killed as Dick Grayson, which was a thing. And we went through the whole, so we're doing that again in a giant mecha suit. And I really liked it a lot.
That's good.
I really did. I was like, oh, I don't know if I want this. But as I read it, because here's the thing. I think I said this when Dick Grayson was Batman. Like, I'm like, I've had a lot of Bruce Wayne in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it being Jim Gordon... which seems out of character to my immediate thought, but they made it work for the most part. They were like, you're going to have to work out and eat better. You know, basically, and he stopped smoking and did the whole thing. It's interesting. It's very, I don't want to live with this forever.
Right.
And then the other side of it is that I really enjoy the direction that Capullo's art is going.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not the same as when he started on this, I don't think. And
in what way do you think that is?
I don't know. Like
it's
cleaner.
Well, that changed when they changed inkers.
Yeah.
Danny Mickey came on about halfway through the run, and the art went from scratchier to clean. So that definitely changed with inkers.
Yeah, but I even think he's just toned down, trying to be impressive a little bit, and he's really like the storytelling's buttoned up a little bit. There's this scene here I'm thinking of specifically. Gordon is talking to, what's her name? Jerry. I don't know.
CEO?
Yeah, they're looking down on the recruits, and mm-hmm. just it's pretty simple panel storytelling, and like you're watching the fight, and I just think it was a little more, I was a little more toned down. I think it actually works better for me.
Mm.
I dug it. I enjoyed it. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what it is that they have with Mohawks. I don't get that.
Well, it's the Marine. It's the Marine thing, I guess. Well, first of all, we should mention that Gordon is actually in a bat suit inside the mech. So the mech is sort of his public facing. I don't really have superpowers or lots of training, so I'm in the mech suit for the most part. But he also jumps out and sends up a cool all black suits, kind of Batman Beyond esque. But I do find it interesting, this idea that DC has been on for a long time of Batman as corporation or Batman as group, and not just the Bat family, but this, you know, started back with Morrison's Batman Incorporated, where Batman was a global corporation with Batmans all over the world. And we sort of have it here where the Powers Corporation is creating a new Batman in order to protect Gotham.
Do you think it's some sort of like subconscious corporate thing that's happening that maybe like Grant Morrison started?
I don't know.
Just like they somebody really likes it, so they just sort of keep going with it.
It's interesting. I mean, it's not my favorite interpretation of Batman. Although I did like the beginning of Batman Incorporated for the novelty of it, but you know, after a while, it's just kind of like, you know, I just kind of like the one man plus Alfred plus the psychics war on terror. Mm-hmm. Didn't necessarily need. I don't need to have a, you know, a giant group of Batman.
No, I agree with that too, and I think that's fine. I don't know how long this lasts, you know, if it's, you know, it's like any good thing, Green Lanterns, you know, all the different rings and everything, that was really cool at first, but eventually, like, okay, that'll do, you know, so I don't know.
But this was really fun, though.
It was really fun.
Bruce is there in a plaid shirt with a beard and sitting on the park bench, so he's clearly, you know, as we all knew, not really dead.
And Foggy Nelson identified him, so that's nice.
Well, he'll go to San Francisco. Yeah. And get a red suit.
Precancerous Foggy Nelson.
It is him.
Is that okay? I don't know that I'm not allowed to say that. It was good though. I actually quite enjoyed it. You know, I don't know. I don't know that I've just kind of had enough Batman for a long time, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good. It's a nice fresh take. Constantine.
Speaking of fresh takes,
the Hellblazer number one. Came out. This is co-written by James Tynion IV and Ming Doyle, with art by Riley Rossmo.
They timed this just for the same week that the show was officially canceled.
That is the thing. and I was like, is this really as obviously monumentally poorly timed as possible? Because this is the show, right?
I don't know. I didn't read it.
Okay. Well, did you watch the show at all?
Oh, I watched the show. Yeah.
Okay. I watched the first episode of the show, and I thought, I can't watch that. Because here's the thing, and I will admit a complete bias to this. I read Hellblazer for 10 years, or whatever, from about issue 150 until it ended at 300. That was my John. I wasn't really interested in the other versions of him that came along. It wasn't necessarily that they're bad. It was just like, it's just not that character that I like. It's a different version of it, and it's different enough that I don't find it as interesting. Yeah. So that's all there is to that. The show seemed to be Boogeyman of the Week, and the thing was that he had ghosts following him around that nobody could see, right? Like
it wasn't so much that, just that was the spirit world that other people couldn't see.
Right, but he was basically Haley Joel Osment.
No.
Well, that's the thing in this. He's got
also the show, but the show changed quite a bit from the pilot to the
Yeah, film. I've heard that. I just didn't. And then I was like, it doesn't matter.
No, it wasn't for you. I'm just saying it wasn't quite that.
And then also the one, so that there's that, and then in this book, the art, by the way, I like a lot. I think Riley Rossmo is a great artist for Hellblazer. I think I wish that they brought him onto Vertigo. I think he would have fit in really well with Leonardo Manco and Marcelo Frusin and all the guys that they had doing that, and Bisley. I think it would have been really good. that's a telling statement. But in this, it's the TV version, or I think feels even like more than the like DC version. Right. And he's got a short jacket.
Oh!
I was ready to shut the TV show off as soon as I saw that stupid short jacket. and he's really young, and that's actually the part I don't like the most.
Well, wasn't he really young in the Constantine series, the one that before this?
Yeah, no, but I didn't. That's why I didn't like it. One of the things I really liked about the Vertigo series is that he aged as it went along. He started off young, and by the end, he was like in his 50s. And I really enjoyed that. And you could put that rough weathering into his face because he lived a really, really hard life. And I
thought maybe the older he got, the longer the jacket got.
Maybe.
Well, maybe the jacket grew with him.
One of the last story arcs was about how the jacket was an evil entity unto itself. And then the other thing in this is there is a long time story point that suggests that John is gay, not gay, he's bisexual.
Right.
And it wasn't really a thing that was ever played up in the Vertigo series very often. I think it was remarked upon once or twice. There was like somebody wrote in a thing that you could then make canon and have it be a thing. And that totally fits. You know, guys, basically a bon vivant who lives life his way. He does whatever he wants. He doesn't follow the rules. Bollocks to all that. But in this one, like, it was a different take on that. Like, he went into a restaurant with a big handsome man. He's like, oh, well, what do we have here? And I was like, like, I don't care who John sleeps with, but John, I don't feel like he would have talked like that to a girl. Or, I mean, that was actually his internal monologue, but it was just, there was a lot of internal monologue to sort of tell you that stuff. It didn't feel like my John Constantine, which is what I said about the other one, but I gave it a shot. It wasn't that it was a bad thing. I just thought, I don't know who this character is, and it wasn't something I felt like getting into. I'm not going to get over the sting of having that other, because the other one was so perfect to me. So,
right.
I tried. If you enjoyed the show, you'll probably like this. It was pretty wordy.
You should start a hashtag movement. Not my John.
Not all Johns.
Not all Johns.
No, I don't believe
no, not my John.
Yeah, not my John. Yeah. I gave it a shot. It's kind of what I figured. Like him picking up the dude was weird. Like,
it's not Vertigo though, right? It's regular DC.
I have to look.
I think it's regular DC.
I think so. Yeah, but also like it's just so weird that it's styled after the TV show, which failed.
Well.
And then it came out now. It'd be one thing if it came out then.
Right.
But what a strange.
Came out literally the week the show was finally canceled. Yeah. For good.
After its cancellation had been bandied about forever. Yeah, no, it is DC.
Okay, well, sorry.
But I really do love Riley Rossmo. I think he's great on this.
Even with a short jacket?
No, I don't. He had to do that. It wasn't his fault. But he's also he's really young looking.
Right.
Like he's super smooth and young, and I don't dig that.
Well, if you think about the old book where he started young and ended old, this is the start of a new book and the start of a new John. So I'm not saying they're going to age him. They definitely won't. But that's like, you could grab onto that.
I feel like they're making all these changes to him to go after a demographic which does not exist.
Or that doesn't care about Constantine.
Right. Like, you can do whatever you want to him. You're not going to grab the kids with him. Like, I think they think there's some, like, cadre of 16-year-old Hot Topic kids who are like, oh, we're into this. And it's not. Like, they
this is not a millennial friendly John Constantine.
I don't think so, but God, fucked if I know.
Does he have a Snapchat?
I feel like they're past that. It's Kick now.
So this week we saw Starfire number one, another number one book from DC. Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor writing, and Andrea Lupacino on art. And this is the book for you if you miss Power Girl. It's basically, Emanuela Lupacino, Andrea Lupacino, a lot of different artists. Emanuela Lupacino, female artist on Stargirl, fucking book am I talking? Starfire. Stargirl, Power Girl, and Starfire are all three different characters.
You all twisted up, mate.
So this is the tone and the characterization that you got in that Power Girl book. It's a little sexy, but it's mostly fun and lighthearted. Power Girl. Starfire is, she's now living in Key West, just, you know, in Florida, just like the Palmiotti and Amanda Connor are.
Waiting for that bloodline crossover.
And she's found herself in Key West, and she's very much similar to the old DCU characterization of her. She's a little new to the world, basically, doesn't really know the customs. She explains her origin in the first two pages, so if you don't know anything about Starfire, you get the whole story in those first two pages as she's talking to the local sheriff about who she is and why she's in Key West, and then the local sheriff takes her under her wing and finds her a place to live and some more clothes. And
what's the nymphette factor?
It's not. It's like Power Girl or any Jimmy and Amanda book, where there's a little bit of sexiness, like she retains the ability to learn languages through kissing, like she had in the Marvin Wolfman, George Perez era. So there's that, and she's sexy. So guys,
and she's in Key West,
so, and she's living in a trailer park, and she gets out of the shower naked because she doesn't know people don't do that, and you know, there's that, but it's never exploitative. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more of the silly way, and then there's a hurricane coming, so she's gonna have to save the day.
All
but
right.
It's fun and it's funny and it's got that vibe that Power Girl had, which, you know, Jimmy and Amanda do, and also Harley Quinn, the same kind of vibe. They do sexy, but without it being crass.
Yeah, without feeling. Well, because what I was thinking of was when it was Lobdell, I think, wrote.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was when she was just a sex bot. Yeah.
Right. And so that's what I'm like. That.
No. This feels much more like the original Power.
I don't know what's.
I'm gonna make a jar. I put it on my desk that says Stargirl Power Girl, and I'm going to just put a nickel in it every time I talk about this book and say the wrong name.
Hey, Connor, what's this 15 cents doing over here?
Don't worry about it. So Starfire was really fun. If you like the Harley Quinn, if you liked Power Girl, if you liked those kind of books, if you're a fan of the character and were unhappy with the way she was portrayed in Red Hood, was the book she was in, right? Red Hood and the Outlaws?
Yeah.
Then check this one out, because this is probably what you're looking for.
Whatever.
Well, it was Red Hood and the Outlaws, because it was her and Red Hood and Arsenal with a trucker cap on. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Those were the days.
He should be swinging cats is all I know. if you know what that is, you have been around for long enough to be called. We would hoist one for you, my friend.
Yes.
So if you are looking for perfect geek-themed vacation, you should look no further than Geek Nation Tours. Geek Nation Tours is proud to announce that they're returning to New York City this fall. Attend the New York Comic Con and explore the city that's home to Avengers, Daredevil, Spider-Man, and many more iconic comic book-themed locations over this 7-day tour. Do you think they'll go to the Sanctum Sanctorum?
They should.
We went there.
We did. They should watch our show and go to those places.
That's what I'm saying. And look how young we are. They're even going to go to Jay and Silent Bob's secret stash, Noige, in Red Bank, New Jersey. And
granted, you have to go to New Jersey for that one. So yeah,
that's true. There will be a bridge and or a tunnel involved in
that. Get your shots.
I did not say that.
I did.
All you have to do is have a good time. But comics is not all they have. No. There's more for the other kinds of folk as well. Geek Nation Tours offers great tour packages like a Journey to the Middle Earth tour, where you will head to New Zealand, the world of Lord of the Rings. There's the Zombie Apocalypse Training 101, which is perfect for Halloween, or the Walking Dead fan as you travel to Atlanta to see filming sites and with hands-on survivalist training and more. You could learn throws. And ooh. I assume that they will give you devices which you would then remove the head.
Or like maybe make you live in a tent with a dude with guns and knives, and you get to make fire and
a surly lady with a sword.
Yeah, exactly.
You can go on the Galaxy Far Away tour because you may have missed Star Wars Celebration in beautiful Long Beach, California this year. No, Anaheim. But next year it'll be in jolly old London. An area where Alan Moore himself claims to have met John Constantine himself twice. That's thing I learned.
That's true. It did happen. He did claim that he was made manifest.
Mm-hmm.
Fun times.
I'm going to divert right here. I really want that to be true. There was no part of me that was like, yeah, whatever, get off it, mate. On your bike. Those are pretty strange. I totally want that to be a thing. And even if it's not like I want him to have experienced as it a real thing and believe it, and I'm totally fine with that. I do no judgment. So maybe you should go to London to see about Star Wars and see if you can meet John. All these things and many different tours can be found at geeknationtours.com, so you can book your geek tour today.
So this week we saw the finale of Chrononauts, the fourth issue, which really could have been 4 and 5 because it was a double-sized issue.
$6.
Six for $6, but $6 worth of content.
True enough.
And this issue ended the bros in space or time story really, really, I thought, rather perfectly. I mean, the tone of the story has been sort of bros in time, and it's just the way it ends. And I thought that was fun. And I really, really want to see the movie version of the final battle.
Yeah. It was fine. I didn't like the last beat. I thought it was a little, like, sitcom-y. And
well, yeah, but I thought that was sort of the tone of the story.
I guess the only other thing I would say about it was that there was a ton here, but it actually felt really rushed. Like it was moving around super fast and zipping around, and the hows and whys weren't so important. It was just an excuse to sort of draw a bunch of different stuff, which is fine because Sean Murphy drew the hell out of this, and I liked everything he drew in it. All the different kind of warriors, all the different cars, and
I like the beginning where, so the last issue ended with our two heroes subdued by their soldiers who decided they're going to take the power for themselves. And so then the people from the future or now have sent back Tommy Lee Jones to save the day. And they ended up in back in 6 million years BC with the dinosaurs, or 66 million years, 65, 65 million years. And his whole crew is taken out by a T-Rex, and he's got the radio, and he's still got the suit, and he's going to go back and save the day, and he gets stomped on. Mm-hmm. I just like that, the opening beat, to sort of subvert your expectations.
And I think the strongest part of this issue was the bit where they just kind of throw him to the dogs, and he goes, you know, I'm a genius.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I'm not going to get beaten by a dog. And then after that, it was just ass-kick until the end. I just like using that, the smart guy, you know,
yeah,
thing. I thought that worked really well. And that he used it for good. I don't know. I just feel like they could have played it out a little more and maybe a little differently. I liked the beats of it, but I don't know that I love the execution of it. But I feel like
it's a romp. At the end of the day, this is a romp.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like they're going to have the
not
biggest.
Not my romp.
Push. Not your romp.
Not my romp. Hashtag.
I get
hashtag.
It. Hashtag not your romp. This week, Silver Surfer 12. And I'm gonna say this is the last issue.
Wait. You going on the record for that?
I'm going. Do we have a record?
When you're looking at the last page, is it like the board is broken? Like he's dead.
And we were all Silver Surfers.
Galactus ate him. And you're like, I think there's nowhere they could. And at the end, it said last issue. We'll never see you again, folks. And then we're like, I think I'm gonna make the call. But we're not gonna look.
Well, because here's the thing. The story ends. It says the end, and then you turn the page and it says next issue, last day of Silver Surfer, the Secret Wars. So I don't know if there's going to be a Secret Wars tie-in with him in the battle world.
Listen, I don't want to split hairs with you, son. But
I don't consider that.
When it says
that
next issue.
It says the end.
You just made the call that it was the last issue when it says next issue.
It's not my last issue.
I think this is where we have a problem. we're going to try to work things out and pin it down. I think right there is the thing you want to look at.
It's not my next issue, Josh.
I understand.
It's so in this. What's been fun about this book is not just the Mike Allred art, but is that this has been just as much a relationship comic as it's been a superhero story, mm-hmm, about Silver Surfer and his lady friend Dawn Greenwood, who they haven't actually had any kind of overt romance in this issue. They are living on a paradise planet. The previous story was the Silver Surfer saving all of the refugees from all the planets that the Galactus ate. They had all been living together on one planet, and he accidentally brought Galactus to that planet. And so then he brought them to a new planet at the end, and we find out here it's a paradise. They're all happy, and Silver Surfer's going fishing, and he lives with Dawn Greenwood, but they don't. But it's platonic. But they clearly have feelings for each other. But then you find out this planet's emitting a drug that makes everybody imagine their paradise, and it's bad. But
Starro.
At the very end, they finally have their kiss. They recognize their feelings for each other, and that sort of ends this romance story. It's been 12 issues. It was a nice round number. If there's indeed a Secret Wars tie-in, I'm going to consider that outside of this story, okay, which ended very perfectly.
Okay.
So there you go. 12 issues. So if they put this out, these 12 issues in a collection, there you go. I realized saying last issue when it said specifically next issue is outside the box thinking.
It's a bit suspect.
However, you can't make new ideas without blazing some trails.
I have a short review of Ultimate End number 2.
Okay.
What the fuck is this?
I don't know.
Okay.
This is basically why I stopped reading all the Secret Wars tie-ins and just read the main book, because I find that these tie-ins don't make a lick of sense.
So in the beginning part, they're in the Doom world. Okay, yeah, I get that. I know that. And then they're back in the Ultimate. Wait.
Yeah.
I don't.
The eternal logic of this is not working.
like, there's actually some sort of nice character moments in this, but they're all, I don't know where anything fits in it. It doesn't.
I stopped reading the other tie-in books, but then this is the end. This is the end of the Ultimate Universe,
right,
which I've been invested in for 15 years. Right. So I wanted to read this to end it out, but I don't understand what I'm reading.
No. I guess you don't end Miles Morales' story because his story doesn't end, but that would have been better for me. You know?
Yeah. I feel like the best thing to do is just pretend like this is just happening on the Ultimate Universe and they're all stuck there.
It's an explanation for the sake of an explanation, which I don't like. I don't need it. I don't care. They've done it before and it's never.
I guess what you could say is the Manhattan territory in Battleworld is in fact actually the Manhattan of mostly the Ultimate Universe with some sprinklings of the 616 universe in it.
See, I don't know that that's is the case. I don't know that that's clear.
Well,
I'm only in Manhattan.
No, but Doom rules over everything.
Right.
I'm just looking at the little map in the front, which says Manhattan Territory, and it says, you know, there's two Baxter buildings, and there's an Ultimate's hideout and an Avengers mansion.
But then, like, Aunt May is there, and she's the exact same one.
Listen,
like,
I get it. It doesn't make any sense when you think about it. It
doesn't make any sense. And,
for more
and
than
not,
5 minutes.
Not the strongest Bagley art.
Well, he drew it in 5 minutes.
I get that.
Let's be fair.
I get that.
It's like you draw 20 pages in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
See how you do.
See how you like it.
You did it during an interview.
Yeah. So I want to fit one thing in here that I didn't before.
Yes.
I know. And I know there's one more after this. I wanted to mention Injection number 2. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that we gave it a very good review for the first issue.
No. You liked it a lot. I didn't.
I said I liked it, but I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure yet. I was like, it wasn't bad. I just didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. This issue shaped up what it was a little bit more. I still don't really know what it is. I got a better idea of it. But outside of that, I think that this is. I said that Declan Shalvey put on a clinic for comic book storytelling.
Hmm.
There is a fight action scene in this thing, and it is.
Yeah, that's a good scene.
It's exquisite. And then there's another scene prior to that, which is just where the Sherlock Holmes type character, this guy named Viv, it's a lot of facial acting and stuff and mood tone stuff.
Right.
It's some of the best work that he's ever done. And obviously, Jordi Belair and him have an excellent working relationship, and it shows. Like, they're doing bang up, beautiful work. And that fight scene was like, they should teach that.
Yes.
In comic book courses. It was that good. Also, that cover is spectacular. I think Declan is my new favorite guy who draws clothes in comics.
Okay.
I like his wrinkles.
Okay.
It started with Moon Knight, and then on this, I'm like, oh, this nice suit.
So this week I was reading Saga 29, and I was like, what is going on? Who are these people? What is happening? I'm very confused. Mm-hmm. There's a dragon with a giant penis. And I got to the end and I was like, am I going to have to move the trades on Saga? I don't know what's happening. And that's when I realized I forgot to read 28.
I was going to say, cause I had none of that. And you know me, I'm very confused.
Yeah. And that was my user error. That was when I realized, So,
are you willing to just go out and say that you're pretty sure this is the last issue
of Saga?
Yeah.
Well, I
mean, two people are dead at the end, so three people died in this issue.
No, a lot of people died. It was good. Yeah. That dragon had a big penis.
A dragon sucked his own dick.
Well, he's like, you know, we had big balls mm-hmm. before on the giant. Now it's time for a real big cock. And, so I need to read 28. To really see how I feel.
I don't know if you need to bother now.
Well, I kind of want to bother. I don't know what's going on.
I'll tell you what's going on right now. Some sagaing. This is some Saga stuff. To get into the Saga part.
Yeah.
Space fights.
It's a lot more actiony.
Dragon Otto Felicio. I just know that there's a script somewhere that's like page 3 and 4. Double page spread of dragon sucking his own dick. Period. Page 6.
It's a fast script.
And this guy is revered as a comic book writer.
As he should be.
I'm not saying he shouldn't be, but you gotta tell me it feels like there's a conflict there.
It's very good. It's still very good. Fiona Staples is still excellent.
Tell the people what morons we are.
So we've made it very clear in the course of the last 45 odd minutes If people don't get it now after 10 years, I don't know what more you want me to say, Josh, but I'll tell them that usually at this part of the show, we tell you to go to ifanboy.com/Amazon or ifanboy.com/registration. Unbeknownst to us, there was a page on the website, ifanboy.com/support, that's got all of it on the same page. So let's just go there. One page for all of your needs.
How many years? Do you think? Two?
What is this page? ifanboy.com/support. That's where you'll find the Amazon link that'll take you to Amazon where you can make your purchase. We get a little piece of that action. That's also where you'll find a membership button where you can become a member for $3 a month, $30 a year. And that's also where you'll find the PayPal donation button where if you're a crazy billionaire who has a couple of dollars to, you know, for tax purposes, you need to get rid of some cash, that's where you can drop it. So all of it is available at ifanboy.com/support where you can go to support the show. See how that works?
Yeah. That makes sense.
We are stupid. If anything, that's what we've proved over the years.
And we're not fine with it. I don't. Yeah.
It was not a good day when we found that page. What the? How long has this been here?
I guess you know what though. There's a certain kind of man who can't admit his mistakes.
Oh, we admit
it. That man is not us. I don't think anybody's going to say those guys aren't humble. Actually, no, people have said that specifically. So, let's do some audience questions.
Yes.
Sam from South London. England, UK. Interested in your comments about Star Wars 5 and 6 and the need to, quote, do something in these stories. That's me who made that comment. As opposed to running in circles and not make fundamental changes. Seems to me that you both tend to be on the other side of this debate where female Thor's Bucky Caps and Batman, Grayson Batman are concerned. The line I feel you've taken is that a good story is the priority and the change can be good even if it's only temporary. Obviously, it sounds like you don't think these are necessary stories, but I'd argue that the craft is not out and out bad, Cassidy's face is notwithstanding. I'm with you, Sam. So I wonder if, after a dozen or so hours of really good thinking, it's adequate, you might consider your own advice pertinent, or whether Santa Solo is substantially different from Thor was fine man for 75 years, stop ruining my childhood.
Was fine as a man for 75
yeah,
years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that too. So what he's doing, he's basically accusing us of hypocrisy, to which I say, yeah.
Yes, Star but Wars. I also don't agree that they're the same kind of characters for me. So for me, Thor from the Marvel Comics is a comic character first, and Han Solo is a movie character first. And Thor has been around in weekly stories for 50 years, 60, I don't know how, 60 years.
64, so.
So he's been in a story every week for 60 years, and he's going to continue to be in a story every week for however many more years there's comics being made. So his stories will be told in a different way than a character like Han Solo, which to me is a movie character who has appeared in 3 movies.
Short bursts.
And will appear in possibly 3 more movies, and that's it until they recast him, and then it all goes out the fucking window and I lose my mind. But for now, he is a character who's been in 2, 4, 6, 7 odd change hours of entertainment. So when you make a change to that character, that's much more substantially different than a character who has been around for 60 years and will continue to be around for 60 more years and be changed and unchanged and lose and get his face scarred and unscarred and have a beard and not a beard and be a frog and then a horse.
That beard really was the thing that put us over. So to boil this down, basically, you're saying that there is an inherent difference to the state of a regular superhero comic book character, so of a Marvel or DC, as opposed to a movie character who is basically been the same.
Right, and
short
I'm not,
appearances.
And the same because he's only been on the screen for 7 hours. And not even 7 hours,
yeah, right.
You know, but and I wouldn't care if, because like I didn't care about the Dark Horse stories, but if only Disney and Marvel hadn't made such a big deal to say these stories matter to the movies.
Yeah.
So if they didn't say that and they were just stories that Marvel was telling, I wouldn't care. But I don't, you know, that's my only reason for caring, because he's a character that is very finite for now, for anyway, until they recast him younger.
He's very solidified. I mean, that's a little like changing our religion.
Right.
And I fully cop to, you know, a level of sacred.
Which is interesting because last week, this is when we talked about it, last week, you were on the side of they have to do something on these stories.
I'm not taking the comic book seriously. I actually agree with you in terms of that, but like, I don't have to take, like, we don't have to, you make your own canon, basically.
Yeah, no. If these stories have nothing to do with the movies, there's a good chance of that, then totally fine. I don't care.
I think it's a feint.
Oh, probably, but I didn't read it, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can only go by all the press releases and articles and reaction people had.
But I will admit that I think this probably I'm probably exhibiting a level of double standard on this.
Sure.
And you gave a reason for it. I have no idea if that's actually valid or not, but it sounds fine to me. No, but like those sort of state changes are the nature of comic book heroes. You know, Batman changes. That's the beauty and the flexibility of the character. When Han Solo doesn't act like Han Solo because he's a real person.
He's Harrison Ford.
Right. You see him, you hear him, you know him. And if it's not that, you're like, that's weird. And I can't even get over it with John Constantine. So,
right.
I don't know. Some characters, okay. Some not.
Right. If Han has been around for 40 years and there's been different actors playing him, and then whatever. And interpretations are interpretations. Mm-hmm. But this is, you're talking about a guy who's been played by one actor for three movies. So it's a pretty solidified character that's got a standard.
It might.
That's my take on it. It doesn't have to be your take on it. But
I know.
We got another one, Pal.
I'll see you in hell.
Is it Pal or Paul? It's probably most likely Paul. I probably messed that up.
Maybe he's a pal.
Pal from England. We're going to call him Pal.
Hey, Pal.
You're going to be our pal. Pal from England says, with the Eisner Award nominations this year, it would appear that there's a general sense of negativity, bias, against new series nominations going on to gain continuing series nominations the following year, which largely seems a logical progression. This seems glaring when you look at the previous year's new series nominations, High Crimes, Lazarus, Rat Queens, Sex Criminals, and Watson and Holmes, none of which have gone on to be nominated for Best Continuing Series this year. Breaking it down, High Crimes and Watson and Holmes, both of which failed to proceed beyond their first six issues, and Rat Queens, which took an enforced five-month hiatus after the highly publicized issues with Upchurch. This leaves Lazarus and Sex Criminals. Both of these series, I would argue, have gone from strength to strength, and their nomination to Best Continuing Series, their non-nomination to Best Continuing Series seems odd. This seems particularly puzzling when Best New Series nominations this time include Astro City, Bandette, The Walking Dead, all justified perhaps, but haven't really pushed hard in the accelerator from the previous year, and Southern Bastards, which surely should be amongst the new series nominations and deservedly so. And so, I think what Pal or Paul fails to realize is that every year their judges are different.
Comics are very, yeah, and they're also very transient.
But it's hard. Different people are making the nominations every year. So what one group of people like in 2014 will not necessarily be what the people in 2015 like.
The other thing going on is that a new series is not necessarily a continuing series.
Although it's interesting, if you look at the 2014 nominations, where is it? I've got them here. One of these years, there's like a new series is also a continuing series. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
The thing is like, okay, even if the judges were the same. So in 2014, 2015, Hawkeye was nominated for Best Continuing Series. We can put aside the craziness of the fact that maybe one issue came out each year. But so a new series doesn't necessarily... Like the continuing series are still going on. If they're still good, then they still should be nominated.
Sure.
So just because a book got nominated for Best New Series doesn't mean it's going to automatically outclass a book that's already been going on. Like Saga has been nominated the last 2 years. Should any of those Best Continuing books knock Saga off of its nominated perch? Maybe, maybe not. Depends on your point of view. But my point is there's tons of books going on, and in those books you can find five or six worthy of nomination. Just because there are five new ones doesn't mean you're going to knock out the old ones.
Nowhere Man's not a continuing series, is it?
No, I think it was ended early. That's the problem with comics. You don't really know what's continuing.
But that's the other thing. Like these terms are not finite. Like what's a continuing series? Everything at Marvel is ending. Everything at DC just kind of ended, but weren't rebooted. But before that, they kind of didn't end, but they were rebooted.
And especially now when they don't like to announce what is a limited series because people don't buy them.
Right.
I mean, there's the best limited series category. Right. But that tends to be for...
So maybe it's that the Eisners are using outdated terminology.
Yeah.
Or at least it's not consistent with the way that the market is actually working currently. But it's also... I mean, here's the thing. Like, it's all a bit...
It's all subjective, too.
Yeah. And it's just a bit fuzzy, and things don't quite fit in the boxes, but they fit them where they can because those things deserve some recognition for whatever reason. I think High Crimes.
Right, and again, at the end
of the limited series.
At the end of the day, like you got a new group every year, so you can tell their tastes. You know, you'll see very heavily in one kind of book one year or the next year. You know, there's one year where there was hardly any superhero books, and the next year there was a lot of them. And you know, it just depends on who's the judging team is every year.
I was thinking about this week. Like, I mean, we exhibit that.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, totally. I think if you look over the years, what sort of became the pick of the week, and there's a class of creator, there's a group of people that we lean towards. We're not leaving other people out, but there's things that we like, and like a lot of the people that we liked 5 years ago were all doing superhero books, and now they're all doing their own thing at Image, like all of them, like a couple, and so we're reading that stuff because we developed with them to a certain extent, and so that would mean that if we did awards, they would be different every year. And we do awards every
week. We used to do it at the end of the year. We used to, again, those would always change. Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, but so imagine, so even with the same people, they're changing. So you're then switching the people all around, they're going to be completely inconsistent. And I think it's just the nature of the game, and don't let it bother you.
Yeah.
That's where I've come to with this.
Trying to make any sense of the Eisners will make you go crazy.
Yeah.
Or any awards, really.
It is totally subjective. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that.
It's subjective, and the nature of it, of the way they do it with rotating judges, makes it even crazier. At least in like the Oscars or the Emmys, it's the same voting body every year, mm-hmm. with new members. But at least, you know. But then again, that leads to the same things winning all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that leads to your 30 Rock. Not that it didn't deserve it, winning 5 years in a row.
Well, let's say 2.5 Men, if we really want to.
Right. So that just, there's pluses and minuses to each system. But yeah. Don't go nuts.
Don't go nuts.
Don't go nuts. Don't, so
listen, pal. That's all I had. That was it.
Email us at contact@fanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY-326-2697. Tell us who you are and where you're from. And if you call us, keep it around 30 seconds. Nothing to plug. We've got about 5 weeks till Ant-Man. There'll be an Ant-Man podcast when that happens, I assume. I've yet to meet a human being that's excited for this movie.
I can't imagine that if you got in a room with Paul Rudd and you were like, how do you feel about this? He'd be like, oh, it's going to be great. And you'd believe him at all.
I know people who were at the Marvel premiere, the Avengers premiere, and he was there and he looked completely shell-shocked, I was told.
Yeah.
Well, so, we'll have one of those for that show. I'm going to see it. Josh may not see it, but I'm going to see it. And,
really don't want to see it.
Don't see it. No one's holding a gun to your head, Josh.
Something about San Andreas.
Head over to iFanboy.com.
No, head to the movie theater and go see San Andreas.
Talk about this week's books. Never mind. Talk about this week's books. Find all other podcasts at iFanboy.com. You can follow us at Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. And individually, we are J.A. Flanagan and at C.S. Kilpatrick.
What I want to know is when you go over to the website and you make a comment, like, is there anyone out there who really likes this new Constantine? Like, is anybody like, I really didn't like it before, but this, I really dig this, and I'm into it. I've been reading it all for years. I want to know if that person exists, because I don't think they do.
It would be interesting to hear from them if they did exist.
It would be, and I don't discount you. I just want to know if you exist. If you like this show, you can go over to iTunes. You can leave us a review. You can rate the show. You can do that. Better yet, use the power of your voice on the social media available to you and help spread the word, or even just you tell a guy. You're at the bus stop. And a man next to you is saying, a long time ago, I read this comic book I like a lot. And you go, yay, you know what? I know these guys that talk about comic books. You're going to like this show. Do that. And if that person is your mom.
Make sure he's wearing pants.
Yeah, that's a good point. If that person is your mom, so much the better, because you should tell your mom about stuff too. That would be awesome. And we thank you for doing that. That is all for this week's show. We thank you for listening. I had fun. Yeah. Did you have fun?
I did.
Dog Wilder.
It's so offensive.
It's so offensive. Jean de Baton, he's just making fun of French people in a really old way. he has a stripy shirt and like leggings and a beret and a little mustache. It's xenophobia against the French from somebody from the UK.
Oh boy.
Jean de Baton.
So until next time, I'm Connor.
Bueno.
Like to wish, and I'm out, 'cause I ain't got time.